Baruchim Avon B'Shem Hashem. Our first session is eating out what could be the problem. And Rabbi Schreier told me that he has a two-hour shiur, which he's condensing. It's really two shiurim, he's condensing into one. So we have to be mired with questions. We're going to have questions right at the end. You have room in the back of your booklets to write any questions that you have while he's speaking, and we'll take time at the end. Rabbi Schreier is a Talmud of Rabbi Yosef Eisen, who will be giving a shiur on Bedikas Taloyim. It will be a video with screens showing how to check for vegetables, and hopefully we'll have some live specimens in the vegetables. He'll be on January 10th, and he's the one who really put the OU's food service program in terms of restaurants and caterers on a very high level. It was followed by Reb Nachum Katz, who subsequently became the head of the Vada Kashrus of Queens. And now it's in the hands of Rabbi Dov Schreier. And the Baruch Hashem, Reb Dov has followed in this high level. One of the areas where the OU, I think, has a very high level, which not many Vadim have, and that is that they have a Mashgiach Tamidi, not a Yaitzev and Nichlis, but a Mashgiach Tamidi in each restaurant and catering establishment. And I don't want to take out further time. Without further ado, I'd like to call on my good chaver, my colleague, Rav Dov Schreier Schlieper.
Thank you to Rabbi Grossman for all of his efforts to bring Torah and Kashrus education to the Hamoinam, not only in Lakewood, but all around the country and all around the world. As he said, I'm going to try and condense 2 hours into one, so let me start now, try and leave some time for questions at the end, and hopefully we'll accomplish something tonight. I'm going to stay very practical with my presentation tonight and try and talk about different scenarios which you see in front of you and bring them back to some of the halachos that many of you have studied and are familiar with. But I want to start with somewhat of a brisker chakira into the idea and the approach of kashrus organizations to food service, to restaurants and caterers. The question is, are we giving hashgacha on the chefza, or are we giving hashgacha on the gavra? When hashgacha is saying that so-and-so restaurant or so-and-so caterer is under their hashgacha, are they saying that they're verifying that everything that's there is under hashgacha? Or are they saying that this balabais, just as a haskama and a sefer might say, that I didn't read the Sefer and I don't know anything about what's in the Sefer, but this High Gavra Rabba wrote the Sefer, so it must be something that's a Davar Mesukan. Are we going and saying that we're verifying by checking and looking and finding the Chefta, that which is in the restaurant, that which is by the caterer, that which is being done on Shabbos? Or are we just relying on the Balabas, who's Shomer Shabbos, who's Shomer Torah Mitzvos, but whose first, second, third, and fourth priority is to stay in business, especially today in these difficult economic times? On the first page you have in front of you are a number of Maran Makomos. If you're fair to look at during your time, I'll just briefly mention the Rashi Prakim of each one. Bishulakum, which is very relevant to restaurants and caterers, the separation of meat and fish, the sending out of food, shiluach al ideakum, or what people more colloquially call basish nesalim in ayin. Another question which we'll discuss later about chalav shkedim, whether someone has almond milk or parva milk, whether that's an issue, whether we require, jump the gun for a second, whether we require a caterer who's serving parva milk, especially in a place that is a treifa place that has milk accessible, whether we require him to put on the table the portion controlled coffee rich that says what it is, or we allow him to put a fancy container, a fancy pitcher of the parva milk on the table. The first half of the shiur we're going to talk about restaurants and caterers. The second half we're going to talk more about Shabbos, go through some of the guidelines which we send to caterers for Shabbos, and finish, hopefully, with going through a menu together, how you read a menu and are able to understand and view what is going on and what you have to be concerned about when it comes to Shabbos. The second page, which is opposite the Mar Makomos, lists questions what to ask about a restaurant and sound intelligent. I want to go through some of them and talk about, you know, the many phone calls that I get throughout the day and throughout the week about people, tell me about a restaurant. When someone asks you about a shidduch and someone tells you, tell me about the person, and you say they're a nice person, what does that mean to you? You have to ask real questions. Ask questions that mean something. Is the Baal HaBos a nice guy? Well, that comes back to the Chetz and Gavra. What are the questions that you're going to ask that are relevant and are going to be relevant on a regular basis? Who has keys or access to keys to the refrigerator? As Rabbi Grossman said in his introduction, the OU is in a somewhat of a fortunate position where we insist on a hashgacha tamidis in every single one of our food service establishments. That means that there's a mashgiach opening till closing in all of the places. He locks the refrigerators, often will lock the gas. We'll see that in a second. But one of the things that is always a problem and is always a challenge is the case of emergency. You could imagine a case where it might be snowing outside. Maybe you can look outside and see it. Or I'll give you a more real example. On the day after 9/11, at 5:45 in the morning, you received a call from a mashgiach who lives in Muncie. Talk about a dedicated mashgiach who was trying to get to his restaurant in Manhattan, and there were no buses going from Muncie to Manhattan because of that situation. What are you going to do eventually when you find the mashgiach to go to the place? The mashgiach has his keys in his pocket at home. There are no keys in the restaurant. What are you going to do? So one of the things that we've done in many of our places, in the past we used to have an envelope. The envelope is sealed with the mashgiach's signature that says, do not open without permission of the OU, etc. Lamaisa, what happens when the mashgiach is late, or a little bit late, or even 5 minutes early, but they think he's late? They're going to open the envelope. They're going to start operation. You'll hope and pray that the mashgiach, the owner is Shomer Shabbos, and actually there's a Shomer Shabbos breaking the seal. And then you go ahead at the end of the day, by accident, figure out when the mashgiach remembers to call you 3 hours later that he's late, that something's going on there and you don't know anything about it. One of the things that we've done is everyone in their home, including myself, has a Shabbos lock on their door. Push button, which is not electric, so you can get in on Shabbos. We have what's called a patent similar to that called store key or something to that effect, where you have a box where the keys can go in there. All the keys to the establishment stay in the establishment, but have a combination which every few months we remind the mashgichim to be sure to change the combination in case someone might have figured out the combination. But the keys are always in the establishment, but they don't have a key. One of the things that this obviates is when the person comes and the mashgiach is late and you get a substitute, you know, what are you supposed to do? I've gotten a phone call on a Motzei Shabbos that on Thursday night, the place wasn't open Friday, Thursday night, the mashgiach who went home on Thursday night took the emergency keys home with him, and now he's in Brooklyn and they're in Manhattan, they want to open the restaurant. Right, one of the things we try to do is be sure that the keys are available, but they have to call the OU or have to call the mashgiach, call someone to get the combination to the keys in order to open the refrigerators. You want to know who has access If they're opening the refrigerators, they could be putting meat, they could be putting anything else in there in the establishment. Briefly describe the closing procedure at night. You lock up. Many of the fancier restaurants want to have a cleaning crew. Some people like to have their restaurant clean. They want to have a cleaning crew, and you know, every hour the mashgiach has to stay until the cleaning crew finishes can be 3, 4 hours, 5 hours a week. You know, in a month starts adding up to real money. They want to try and find a way to be able to clean with the mashgiach not being there. So a couple of options that we have: either they seal off the gas and they lock it, and the mashgiach locks it and has a key, or to create bars that go over all of the cooking equipment that's locked on both sides, that they can't turn on the equipment. And as one of the mashgichim pointed out, that's very nice for the oven, but what about inside the stove? So they created something that goes from the middle of this bar under, which is the chain that goes over the door of the oven, so the oven can't be opened either. A number of ways to keep a place closed and sealed at night. Number four, this is probably the most important one. Bishul Akum is one of the biggest challenges that exist in a restaurant. Sometimes you get a question: what's the difference between halacha and policy? Sometimes your policy has to be sometimes more strict than halacha, because caterers, by extension, many of the goyim, are very bright. And they're very, very good at learning and being maven davar mitoch davar. And if you tell them that carrots, the guy is allowed to cook, then tomorrow potatoes are being cooked and the next day meat is going to be cooked. So sometimes, even though it's a davar she'enechal kemoshu chai, something that is eaten raw, or something that's not olal shulchan malachim, that will not be brought on shulchan malachim, you have to make a policy that the mashgiach is the only one who turns on the fire. We have in the Mara Makomos the different positions when it comes to a pilot light. A pilot light is used to be something that was in between the two fires, where you turn on the fire, the fire goes on. So we always, in most places that do not have a mashgiach tamidi, they are relying on the fact that the Shomer Shabbos Balabas is coming in the morning and turning on the fire, and maybe is in the kitchen the rest of the day involved in adjusting the fire. To the best of our ability, we make sure that all of the pilots are working. On top of that, the mashgiach turns on the fires at the beginning of the day and is monitoring the fires that the guy is allowed to adjust, but once he turns it off, they have to call the rabbi to turn the fire back on. It's very important to check if the pilot lights are really working. And any busy establishment requires someone to be monitoring this on a regular basis, daily, hourly, to be sure that this is still the case. But another area, which is an even bigger challenge than the fires in the ovens, is what's called a convection oven. The convection ovens operate under two different possibilities. The old-time convection ovens operated with a pilot light, which means when you close the oven, when you open the oven and the fan stops blowing, but because the pilot light is still lit, the fire stays on. So every time it gets closed again and the fan goes on, it's still from the original cooking of the Yid, of the Jew, who hopefully turned it on in the morning. Over the last 6 or 7 years, any new convection oven operates on electronic ignition. This means that if the second that the oven is open, not only does the fan go off, but also the pilot light goes out, the fire goes out as well. Within 3 to 5 minutes, the temperature on the convection oven will go below about 200, I think it's 170 or 176 is the actual temperature, but below 200 degrees that the OU has determined as the temperature that the mashgiach needs to have turned it on to, at least in order for the guy to turn it higher. And once the guy goes ahead and closes the convection oven again, it's now not Eish El Yisrael, but it's an Eish of the fire of a non-Jew. One of the things that we've done in these places, and I'm mocking this with doing what I'm about to tell you, takes the convection oven out of warranty, and now if it breaks, the company has to pay to have it fixed. But the only way to be able to for it to work is to override this function. Have a number of plumbers who've come to most of our places to go ahead and, for the lack of a better word, rig the machine that when it opens, the fan goes off and it stays at above 200 degrees at all times. So when it gets closed, it's still going to be the fire of the Jew who lit it.
What's in all the places?
Huh?
How about all the places?
Some of the places still have an old-time connection. Please list the Bedika process. Rabbi Grossman mentioned that Rabbi Eisen's going to talk about vegetables, so I won't talk about that. Describe the way outgoing orders are packed for delivery. I got a call the other day from a consumer who called an order from one of the restaurants. He had a meeting in a fancy hotel, and he ordered a lunch. And he happened to have sent a person to pick it up for him. The restaurant didn't deliver, but he sent a secretary, non-Jew, to go pick it up from the restaurant. And he called to complain, how come their restaurant didn't seal the order? Not in every case that a person comes and makes an outgoing order and he's picking it up, do they have to seal it? If the person's coming to order it and he didn't ask for it to be sealed, the person's coming and getting his order, why should they have to seal it? Nevertheless, I did speak to the restaurant the next day and I told them, you know, the business you're dealing in is dealing with clients on of a higher level. They're not coming in themselves to pick up their orders, even if it's a pickup, because they need it more quickly than you can deliver it to them. You should make it as a policy, unless it's an order that's from a customer who's sitting in the restaurant, every order that comes into the restaurant should be sealed. Do you personally check in all incoming products? Does the Mashgiach check? Or does he just presume that he's getting in the same thing day in and day out? And, you know, even though for the last 10 years he's been getting the same oil and the same products, most distributors, even the Heimische distributors, and that it's something you have to be very wary of, even the Heimische distributors who are all kosher and are well-meaning, not in any way intending to do something wrong, could get a shipment of an incorrect product and are sending it, or they got in a product that doesn't have Ashgacha on it and they were told that it's a reliable Ashgacha and, you know, at the end of the day you find out it's not. You have to check, you know, you're going to get this one's oil today and that one's oil tomorrow. You have to be careful to check. How do you separate meat and fish? So we know you have to have separate ovens but you have to also be careful in the side dishes. In one of our restaurants we discovered a few weeks ago that the potatoes that they use as a side dish were putting in duck schmaltz in the potatoes that were served as a side dish, which were being served for meat and for fish. We became aware of it. We spoke to the Balabas, explained to him the problem. So they started using different sized potatoes for meat and for fish, and they were not putting any more schmaltz in the ones that they were using for fish. Something to be aware of. For which baked item are you mafrish challah? Obviously, if it's a not Jewish owner, there's no chiyuv of afrashas challah. But while they being mafrish challah on b'lila ava and b'lila raka, some people, if you ask them if they're mafrish challah, they answer you that yes, I eat challah on Shabbos. Many people are not even familiar with the requirement to be mafrish challah, let alone that there are halachos associated with b'lilava, b'liloraka, before or after, and what's necessary to be done. For the next 10 minutes or so, I want to talk about a catered affair. A major challenge for a kashrus agency is the restaurant Basher Rusham, where it is. Put that challenge on steroids, and talk about when it's in an outside place. It's a new place, especially We'll start with a shul and go to a treifa place after. Very often in a shul, a person is trying to make a simcha, make a bar mitzvah, an afruf. You have a lot of friends who want to enhance the simcha. One of the most popular things today is there are many people, because there are men doing it also, not only women, who make fancy chocolates and fancy cakes from their own home, with hashgacha, without hashgacha. However it is, and they drop it off, and it happens to be the grandmother of the Baal Simcha, or the great uncle, great aunt of the Baal Simcha, and they bring it into the place. You have to make a policy that no outside food can be brought there. Unless it is hashgacha, it comes with simanim, you know what it is. If you're relying on a caterer, the caterer is the one who has to bring everything, the hashgacha has to be checking what's going on, even if it's coming into a shul. Another issue is, where is all the food coming from? Right? Very often, the caterer will have the bread drop shipped and the cake drop shipped. Drop shipping means they don't even bother delivering it to the caterer's place of business, and then the caterer will bring it to the shul. The caterer has enough of a business with the baker, he's going to tell him, okay, I have 12 jobs today. Number one goes to Base Medrash A, number two goes to Base Medrash C, and etc. It's all going over there. Is it really coming from the baker? Are they coming with simanim? Do they know that it's coming from this place? But then when you go to the shul, if there's no exclusive caterer in the shul, is there someone in the shul who's taking responsibility for all the food that goes on there? Baruch Hashem, Klal Yisrael is making simchas on a regular basis. And you could have, in the same day, a bris, a bar mitzvah, a wedding, you know, going keseder in these places with different caterers every single time. Does the hashgacha agency know how the food is being cooked, where the food is being cooked, what the food is being cooked, what's the story with the ovens in the shul, what's the story, are the ovens milchik, are the ovens fleishik? Right? And does the rav of the shul allow you to kasher the oven b'chal? Another question for talking about shuls. A greater challenge is going into a place that is not kosher. When it comes to going to a place that's not kosher, a hotel, and unfortunately, due to the fact that Baruch Hashem Klal Yisrael grows on a regular basis, there doesn't necessarily exist a place for many of the maestos to make their annual dinner. They have to go to a treifa place because they don't have a ballroom big enough to fit the people who are coming. So some of the concerns that a mashgiach might have, we're not going to talk about the kashering, maybe at a different time, but that in itself is a challenge because the hotel that you're going to has very little interest in accommodating your requests, and even if they tell you at 10 o'clock in the morning you're going to get the oven to kasher, if they get it in order that they need to do something, they're going to use the oven. They could care less about it. Unless your caterer is smart enough to shake hands with the right people in the hotel in the morning, you're not going to get much accommodation. And you also can't tell the caterer that he has to do that. But some of the issues that come up in a hotel, check all the waiters that they do not have any of their own utensils. Doing a dinner for 1,500 people, caterer says that you need a minimum of 7 forks per person just for the reception. Right? Just for the smorgasbord. You're talking about over 10,000 forks before you start getting to the dinner. All the forks that are being used, and we're not even going to discuss the benyomo, eno benyomo, leave that for a different discussion, but all the forks that are being used are exactly the same forks that the hotel's using throughout their system. There's no different, maybe they have one or two different patterns, maybe they don't have 10,000 forks exactly the same, but they have a couple of patterns that are exactly the same, and at the same time of that dinner for 1,500 people is going on, there's another dinner for 600 people on a different ballroom. The waiters in the hotel are not in any way related to the caterer. The caterer has nothing to do with them. The hashgacha agency, Kal v'chomer, has nothing to do with them. they're hotel waiters. The hotel waiters know better than anyone where everything is in the hotel. Job of Mashgiach is to make sure that that 10,500 is a lot greater number than they have. And you know, whenever you're working together with the caterer, and he needs 7,000 forks, right, 8,000, because you want to make sure that there's more than enough, that you want to make it as accessible as possible, that the waiter is not going to feel like he's running out and he's going to have to go run somewhere. And that's why you have extra mashgichim watching what's going on. Number two, properly sealed knives. The chef is married to his knife. He feels not only are his hands his secret weapon that he knows how to cook in a certain way, his knives cut the brisket and cut the corned beef in the exact way to make the bal simcha and the people happy. He wants to bring his own knives, and in fact, in his chef's coat, he might even have a couple knives over there. You want to make sure that the knives were sent, the knives belong to the caterer, and that's what's being used. Mariner, the carving station, right, same idea. Mashgiach turned on all the fires at the smorgasbord. This comes back to what we discussed earlier about Bishalakum, whether if carrots are being cooked, whether you need to turn on the fire. I was once meeting with a caterer who was doing a dinner for about 1,800 people, and I was meeting with the Mashgiach who was going to be kashering the hotel, and the chef asked, does the Mashgiach need to light the sternos for the hot boxes? The sternos are the little metal containers that light up the boxes that the food is being cooked in, but actually that the food is being reheated in, not being cooked. And the Mashgiach said to the chef, who we knew for a long time, he said, no, because if the sternos don't work, you're going to blame me, and any food you're putting in the hot box is already cooked, so you put it in. At the smorgasbord, the sternos for the chafing dishes that are reheating food that was already cooked, and you only have one mashgiach in the kitchen, so maybe it's better to have the guy light the fires of all the chafing dishes, because you got to be in the kitchen, there's kosher and non-kosher going on. But if there are things like crepes or other items that are being cooked that are an issue of bishalakum, or the bris, an egg omelet station where eggs are an issue of bishalakum, then the mashgiach definitely has to turn on that fire. No fish and meat were cooked in an oven simultaneously. Right, we have to be very careful. That's why you find that at a fancy dinner, that they'll go ahead and French, what they call French serve, they'll serve you the meat and the side dishes in front of you. When you order fish, they bring fish to you, they bring the plate to you, because they have a separate section in the kitchen where the fish and the side dishes for the fish are being served. Separate utensils available for fish use, same thing. All margarine was examined for parva status. Come back to what we spoke about, the parva milk, the parva margarine as well. They make margarine patties and butter patties look exactly the same, with the same design and the same pattern. Therefore, it's incumbent upon the mashgiach to be sure that he has some type of tvias ayin on all the margarine that's being used, that if they run out, they're not suddenly going ahead and using butter. At this point, I want to move forward to Shabbos and speak about Shabbos as its own entity. I'm going to try and go for about another 20 or so minutes, and then leave some time for questions at the end. The Olam here, I'm sure, is very familiar with Hilchos Shabbos. One can read through the Maror Mekomos, which we've gone through. I want to touch on a few of them. Just to talk about, like, you know, it doesn't say anywhere in the Shulchan Aruch, number one, that anything that's delivered to a shul has to be there 1 or 1.5 hours before Shabbos. You know, it does say, Asus Yagu Divreichem, and it says, you know, if you aim for a half an hour before Shabbos, you're asking for Shabbos to be violated. I had one story once I got a call about an hour before Shabbos that a truck was in the metropolitan area, was well more than an hour away from the place. Called up the Oyeposkim, 25 minutes, 40 minutes, you can rely on Chazar Ali Deakum only in that specific situation. Well, Baruch Hashem, my cell phone doesn't ring on Shabbos, so I didn't know about this until after Shabbos. But the truck arrived over after the Rabbeinu Tam on Friday night. And the Rav of the Shul, who unfortunately now is in the Olam HaEmes, paskin that the soup in the trellis they couldn't put in the hot boxes that were on before Shabbos, but everything else they could do Chazar Al Yedei Akum for the food. But you're asking for trouble if you're not making sure that the food is going to arrive, especially on these Shabbosos. You know, they're in the month of November and December when the caterer, you know, was going from 6 o'clock Shabbos to 4 o'clock Shabbos overnight, and you're going to run into issues of traffic and issues of weather. You have to be very careful. Number two, no food or any other item may arrive or be brought by the kitchen staff. Forgot the soda, forgot the wine. Just put in the wine for a second. Many caterers do not have what's called a liquor license. And therefore, whenever you go and make a simcha, and you're asking the caterer about wine, schnapps, liquor, whether you should have it or not is a different schmooze. The caterer is going to tell you bring your own. I'm not allowed to have it. I don't want to get involved. You want me to pick it up for you? I'll be happy to pick it up for you. One has to be very careful. Many well-intending people will bring non-mevushal wine, will bring maybe even non-kosher wine, schnapps or other items. You have to, you know, the hashgacha has to be aware of everything that's coming in there. If any one of the people in this room comes to a simcha, and they hear that Chaim Berel's catering is catering, their assumption is that from soup to nuts, Chaim Berel's hashgacha is taking responsibility. So that means if you're at a hotel for Shabbos and they're throwing candy bags at the bar mitzvah boy, you're thinking that everything in that candy bag was taken care of through the caterer. So therefore it's the hashgacha's responsibility to be aware, literally from soup to nuts, of what's going on for Shabbos. Number five always becomes a major issue. All Jewish waiters must be Shomer Shabbos. When a Jew does a maaseh on Shabbos, it's usher till after Shabbos. And if he's not Shomer Shabbos, he's bound to violate many surim. It shouldn't only be waiters, but it should be chefs, and any staff who's working should really be Shomer Shabbos, just because you're asking for Chilul Shabbos to take place where it might even be usher for other people. Just for a second, turn to page 2 of the Shabbos guidelines. Just the product control, just again, number 27, 28, and 29 are again outside food. It's something that if you're on the other side, you're not the hashgacha, but you're making the simcha, and someone is coming and telling you that they're bringing cake, said, your first achrai is to call the caterer or the hashgacha and ask them, is it okay? Because what usually happens is the person is telling you, yeah, it's under a haimisha hashgacha. It comes in. It's not under a good hashgacha. And now you're going to be forced to tell the great aunt, the grandmother, to someone that I'm sorry, we can't use this. It's a very uncomfortable situation. You don't want to get involved. The wine with the mevushal status, I don't know, you know, Baruch Hashem, the Kilo Kedosha here don't have non-Jews, you know, in this room. But you have a situation of non-religious Jews coming. Non-Mevushal wine happens to be much more expensive and available in a much higher end item than Mevushal wine. Restaurants and caterers are desperate to be able to serve and sell because they can make a lot more money selling non-Mevushal wine. But you imagine this is a situation where a guy wants a $300 bottle of wine for his non-Jewish client who's paying for the lunch, and they open the bottle, and now he wants to see the bottle. Right, you say, I'm sorry, I can't show it to you. I'm paying for it. But you go ahead and explain it to him at the end of the day. But besides all the other status of non-Mevushal wine, it's just a better policy to avoid it. You want to do it in your house, be careful for your cleaning lady. If you have, you know, your cleaning lady, you leave it in your refrigerator, she goes and lifts it up and dusts it, so I'm not sure you're able to use it anymore. In the time remaining, I want to go through some of the menu for Shabbos, and I want to open it up to people to help me. This Shabbos Sheva Brachos, that actually Jeffrey and Susan are real people. They were actually one of the secretaries in the OU about 10 years ago who was getting married to Jeffrey. And at the time, Rabbi Eisen and I put together this menu, which lists on every single line, with the exception of Friday night Shabbos lunch and Chalashudis, a Shaila on every line. I want to show you how to read a menu and ask questions and be inquisitive to understand what it is that you're looking for when you're going to be involved in Hashgacha. First line of wine and grape juice. Help? Anyone? All right, mavushal, kosher. The fruit cup, right? Melon bowls with cherries. Right, cherries. Meiser, right? The flavors on the melon bowl. Well, Friday night, the scooper of the melon may be okay. Or many of the fruit cocktails, even though we generally say that you can buy canned fruit without hashgacha, but when they have cherries or maybe even grapefruit, which might be from Eretz Yisrael, one has to be careful. So the cherries you have to be careful with. Gefilte fish on a bed of lettuce, horseradish, mayonnaise, and dressing. Right, the lettuce, what's the question with the tagliatelle? Fish is not the, I hope the fish is kosher. The chicken soup, lakshin, mandolin, and matzah balls. If you refer back to the Shabbos guidelines, you have a whole couple lines of exactly how to serve soup with mandolin. Put in the soup first, and then the mandolin, and put in the mandolin, then the soup, or the lakshin, the soup, then the lakshin. Barbecue chicken. How is it hot? Right. Friday night is obviously going to be easier than Shabbos morning, but how is it being kept hot? Brisket with meat gravy. Right, you have a double lach, it's hot. What are you doing with the gravy? If you'll jump ahead to Shabbos lunch, we have the gravy again. Something to keep in mind, if they're planning to have gravy for Shabbos lunch, you have to be sure that that's planned, that they have two separate pots where they're going to have the gravy on before Shabbos. Potato kugel, carrot tzimmes. So by definition, potato kugel could be fine, could be not. But very often, a caterer, while he might be making the chicken, he might even be making the loaves of gefilte fish, and he might even be making his own fruit cup with the melon balls, he might be buying the potato kugel and he might be buying all the side dishes. Where is it coming from? Is he buying it from? Where is it coming from? Does it have a reliable hashgacha? Is it a hashgacha that you're willing to be comfortable with? On all tables, challah rolls, coleslaw, cucumber salad, pickles, soda, ice. All right, the ice is a question with the what's doing with the. You know, how do you put it in? You put some water on the bottom so it doesn't melt in and become nolad. Right, again, the challah rolls, the coleslaw, the cucumber, all of those, where are they coming from? Is the caterer the one who's providing this, or is he getting it from somewhere? And often, all these things might be delivered to the shul before Shabbos, not even brought to his place of business. Mazel tov cake. Check with host for inscription. So everyone here already has the chocolate bar that they put the inscription on, or whatever they put, or the cookie or something else. I was once called on a Friday. Mashgiach was at a convention or a bar mitzvah, and they had a fancy mazel tov cake written right on the cake. Rav Shechter Shlita wrote a beautiful tshuva, as only he can, in his beautiful poetic language. So he writes that what you should do under the circumstances, you should take the cake out in front of everyone, like this beautiful sign, L'Pirsume Nisa, right? Everyone should be able to see it, and they should take the cake into the kitchen, have a guy cut it, because It's a chumrah of the Ramah, and in this situation we shouldn't embarrass them under the circumstances. But one has to be careful that you have to read. You have to read what's going on. Check for oath with inscription. Right? It requires a phone call to the caterer. Make sure that it's on a cookie, or make sure it's on something else, just to be sure. In fact, a few years ago, when I in the first position I was as a rav, one of the people in the shul was makari of a certain person, and he was the boy was being bar mitzvah, and the person was ordering a fancy mazel tov cake for the boy, and the person happened to ask me, I happened to have been in the neighborhood where the cake was coming from, if I could do him a favor and pick up the cake. So I called up the bakery and I asked him, what does it say on the cake? So he said, it says it on the cake, mazel tov, whatever his name was. So I asked the bakery if they could do me a favor and just do the same thing on a cookie. So they did. The Baal Bas got very upset. You know, in fact, he even called Rav Shechter. He had a relationship with Rav Shechter. He called Rav Shechter and said, I don't understand. This one says it's okay. This one says... So Baruch Hashem, Rav Shechter said, what do you want? At 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it's no good in the OU, and at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, now that he's here, it is good. You can't have a certain situation like that, but something to be aware of and be careful with. Coffee, tea, wedges of lemon, sugar, sweet and low. Everyone in itself is a question. First of all, how are you having coffee for Shabbos? In many of our homes, we have an urn. Depending on the level of hot drinking in the house and hachnasas orchim in the house, you go anywhere from 30 cup to 100 cup to 200 cup, whatever you want to have. But in many of the catering facilities and many of the shuls, when they do construction on their shul, they're going to put in an instant urn that where the water constantly can keeps filling itself up. Every time you take a cup of hot water on Shabbos, in that way, the feed feeds in cold water, which will then get hot. So you're creating hot water on Shabbos, which could be a serious problem. So one of the Shabbos guidelines we have is that you have to shut off the inlet valve before Shabbos. That whatever you take, but there's going to be nothing left. But what are you going to do on Shabbos? You have an oilam this size, Baruch Hashem, and they're all looking at the snow outside and freezing, and everyone wants a cup of coffee. Right? It's the job of the caterer, the Baal Simcha, and the Rav HaMachshir to be sure that there's going to be enough coffee for Shabbos, enough tea, enough hot water for Shabbos. So I think if the number was 7 forks, back to the reception, I think they said five cups of coffee five cups of hot water per person for Shabbos. And that's an underestimate. So you imagine you're 300-400 people. You know, 2,000 cups of tea or coffee on Shabbos is a major task for a caterer to be sure to have it, and also to have it in the places where he needs them to be on Shabbos. Wedges of lemon. Rav Shechter felt they shouldn't go on the table because it's, even though you could, yes, everyone in this room knows I can squeeze the lemon onto the sugar and use and then put it into my coffee, but most of the people sitting by this are just going to squeeze it into their tea. Sugar and sweet and low. Rav Shechter, when we were going through our Shabbos guidelines, actually took a packet of sugar and sweet and low and was able to open it without tearing any letters, which I'm sure most people here could do. So we write it in terms that, you know, loose powdered sugar and sweet and low should be made available for those who don't want to tear the packets on Shabbos. The problem with making it available in the packets, they can be reused. Once it's put in a bowl on the table, the caterer is not, whether he is or isn't, the caterer is not legally allowed to reuse it. Shabbos lunch, centerpieces with candles, b'didiha v'uvda. I was in a hotel for Shabbos, serving as a mashgiach, and the bane of the existence of a caterer, and the Mchilas quote anyone who might do this for a living, is a party planner. A party planner very bright person, trying to come up with a chachma, different ways to enhance the simcha in a way that people are going to walk away and say, ah, they came up with a kunz, I want to do this at my next simcha. For Friday night at this hotel, they have beautiful centerpieces on every table, and all the centerpieces are lit on the top with candles. Siyata Dishmaya is a wonderful thing. I happen to be walking by when the party planner was asking one of the waiters in the hotel, can you do me a favor and light these tomorrow morning at 10:30? Right, so I pointed out to the party planner, okay, ad kidei kach, no, ad kan v'sulo. Let's stop here. But this is something that, you know, centerpieces with candles. What candles are going on Shabbos lunch? Right? Fruit cup with whipped cream on top. Comes back to the same question of the fruit cup. I just want to finish so I can leave some time for questions. The whipped cream, are you allowed to spray the whipped cream or not? So ask your local posek. Gefilte fish and chopped liver on a bed of lettuce. Right? You can't have them both on the same bed of lettuce. Right? Eat the fish. A question of whether you're even allowed to have them on the table at the same time. You know, every hashgacha has to decide how far they want to go in that regard, whether they have to serve the fish first, or they can serve three people fish and six people chopped liver. That's a question you can decide. Toss salad, romaine lettuce, raspberries, cucumbers, tomatoes. Raspberries are an issue with talayim, romaine lettuce and the salad. Stuffed cabbage with gravy. Again, our gravy question for Shabbos. Cold cuts. Where are the cold cuts coming from? Are they made? Did they come before Shabbos? Just knowing whose cold cuts are using, a half a second just about, especially Bizman Hazeh, with what's going on with the meat in this country. One has to be extra careful and diligent, as I've told every one of my mashgichim, to double and triple check all the meat that's coming. Just, you know, if one of the largest suppliers is no longer there, everyone's still getting meat. So I guess, you know, one of the advantages for some of the restaurants is business is down, so they're not as lachutz for getting as much meat as they were getting, but, you know, hope it'll turn around for them. Cholent, potato, and lakshin kugel. And many caterers don't make their own cholent. Where are they getting the cholent from? Is it coming in properly? Where is it coming from? Potato and lakshin kugel, again, potato and lakshin kugel. On all tables, same story. Ice cream parv, dessert. Very often, when you're going to a hotel or going somewhere, they have a Friday night and a Shabbos lunch. And then Motzei Shabbos, they're going to have a fancy malava malka, which may even be milchik. The caterer doesn't want to make two trips to the simcha. They send everything. Shabbos lunch is parva ice cream. Motzei Shabbos is milchik ice cream. Mashgiach Bal Simcha has to be super careful. Maisim Shahayu many times over, where people were served the milchik ice cream by mistake. You have to create a system where you're sealing up anything that's not going to be used on Shabbos. Birthday cake, happy birthday mom. Again, the tea, coffee, mocha, etc. A question on Shabbos, whether you're going to get involved with the question of the coffee rich, whether they have to be in portion control or not. In a shul, you probably could maybe be more mekel. In a treifa place, you probably should be more machmer. Shalashudis, let's finish with the right challah rolls. If you're having milchiks by shalashudis, you may not want to have the same. They should have a separate bag of challah rolls to use for shalashudis. Macaroni and cheese. If lunch finished today at 12:30, and shalashudis is at 4:30. Sorry, 4:23 before Shkia. The can't be having macaroni and cheese unless the oilam is a yekesh oilam. Right, tuna and egg salad platters. We write that the platter should preferably be made before Shabbos. Cream cheese and butter, all the same question. Milk, orange juice, soda. Again, milk. It's after all this, the same 6-hour question, and the same tea and the cake. Also, you want to be careful with the cake. You know, it should be a separate cake for shalashudis as well. The last couple pages is just a checklist for Margiah to guide him. Probably should have it hanging in the kitchen for himself over Shabbos, just to, you know, Friday you should be looking at the first three or four lines, the first three or four columns, to be sure, or everything. You should be making sure all of these things and to double check everything, whether they're covered. One of the interesting things in the idea of making the low plug is if a caterer is going to an off-premise place, caterer should always cover the tables, even if it's a kosher place. His staff is often familiar with the fact that when it's not my place, the table gets covered. It's not kosher. It's something different. In a hotel, kal v'chomer, when you know the distance from here to here, from my tape player to the microphone could be kosher and treif, right? Kal v'chomer that you have to cover and designate and clearly distinguish one from the other. In the time remaining, I want to give people an opportunity to ask questions, and please try and be as mekatzer with the question as you can to give everyone an opportunity to ask.
What simon did they use for hard ice cream and fish and soup?
It's a good question. What the simon would be that?
You mentioned before the problem on skate.
So parva ice cream. We're assuming that they're bringing that they've locked up any of the milchik ice cream. It's not going on the table to see the chalav shkedim. No, it's not going on the table to see the. So there are two answers. The first answer about the chalav shkedim is when you have it on the table with the meat. Coffee is usually not served. We just do this because in the hotels they have milk available, and we want to be sure that they're not switching the milk for the coffee rich for milk. When it comes to the ice cream, often the hotel has is not serving milk with ice cream right next to where they're serving the parva ice cream.
One thing out of fish is stupid.
Right.
The parva ice cream.
Parva ice cream is served after the meal. It's not served.
There's no fish.
You make sure that everything is brought into place, the old man's lollipops and the soup to the wine, nothing's brought in the premises without...
Try our best. We try our best, and unfortunately, I go back to a conversation, to a phone call I got on a Motzei Shabbos. Baruch Hashem, the phone hasn't rung tonight, so fortunate to off night. The Mashgiach called me from a restaurant that a Baal Simcha was making a Simcha in the restaurant, and he wanted to bring in non-Mavushal wine. So I told the Mashgiach, Loi mitanal. No, it's not a discussion. An hour later he calls me. While I was checking something in the kitchen, one of the guests snuck in a couple bottles of non-Mavushal wine. What do I do now? I said, you have to go to the management and tell them that they have to take it off the table. It's not a discussion. Well, what he ended up going ahead and doing was he went to the waitress and told the waitress that she's not allowed to pour any of the wine tonight. The waitress went home crying, thinking that she might have contaminated the wine, which she did, but she might have. But go ahead and explain it. You have to be on top of that. That's the job, and that's one of the reasons why you need some of a fakeach of kashrus on the spot, and not necessarily yotzei v'nichnas.
Do you find there's a problem when you cater in a shul?
No, in fact, many of the rabbanim, in some of these places, recommend to their balabatim to only use such a caterer who is makrid in such a way. They respect if you do it respectfully. In general, when we go into an Orthodox shul, we will burn out the ovens. I don't want to start checking the rav tzitzis. This one yay, this one nay. Unless you're the exclusive and then you have access to the, exclusive access to the kitchen, you don't want to be going and getting involved in that.
Is it preferable for you, due to many problems, for your Yeshiva man not to eat in a hotel due to many problems?
I'm going to answer your question in a different way. It's a fair question. I don't think ad kidei kach. But one of the things that I want to share is, I get calls all the time with different questions about things that go on. And people are calling me somewhat almost apologetically. I'm sorry for being matriach you. I'm sorry for bothering you. And I say to the people, Adarabba, those consumers who care are additional eyes and ears for the OU. The one who cares and asks the question, thank you for bringing it to my attention. The one who called me earlier this week about he got a delivery, or he picked it up and it wasn't sealed. I spoke to them the next day. I called them back. I said, thank you for bringing it to my attention. I was moirid, and they're going to follow. Most people have the attitude that if Yenim is the Hashgacha, then it's on his plate, it's not on my back. It's not correct. Right? In your own house, it's not correct. Right? You ultimately have that responsibility. But wherever you're going to go, I speak to Mashgichim who are Mashgichim by, hotel affairs, and the most frustrating thing to them is someone who comes over to them by the dessert or the Vietnamese table or room or whatever you call it, and says, oh, you're in a Mashgiach, oh, everything's good. Right? So what happened to 3 days before? I have a chaver of mine who's a tzaddik yisod olam. Nebuch, he's had a lot of tzaras in his life. But he won't go to eat anywhere without calling me. Not for breakfast, not for lunch. I speak to the guy 5 times a week. This guy has a public relations director that keeps him running around everywhere, Bulia and Hara. And he says, I'm sorry. I said, no, please, thank you for calling. I appreciate when people call and ask, but that's why what to ask about a restaurant and sound intelligent. All right. You're going to ask me, tell me about it. So, yeah, if you have a specific question, ask the question. Yeah.
So what's the OU's policy on filtering the water?
Filtering the water? The OU policy currently is that we require the restaurant to filter the water. Mashgiach is, we have someone going around besides the Mashgiach. We check it at least monthly to be sure that it's being monitored.
The evidence, the water got
something like this. So it's interesting. Rebelski felt it wasn't necessary. He felt it wasn't necessary, but he felt that the OU shouldn't be putting itself in a position that half of Klal Yisrael won't drink, won't go into the places because the water is not filtered. B'di'evan, when we check, we make sure that it's taken care of. But initially, we revire any place that came to the OU since didn't open without the water being filtered. And the Mashgichim are monitoring, and the Rav Amashu who goes around is monitoring as well. Well, the food that gets cooked, it would seem that other than hot water, many posts can feel that they did a test with beads, I think, and with and plain, that after half an hour with beads, most of the bugs got destroyed. So other than a plain clear soup, with the evidence, I think you're just the hot water itself, it wouldn't be careful. Yeah.
And with ice
coming
in.
The ice machines by manufacturer's requirement have to be filtered.
What size stone?
50 microns or less.
The restaurant something goes itself as Yashin.
Yeah.
So all you must be is make sure that the fire is coming to the Yashin.
Yeah. He asked if a restaurant says it's Yashin, does the OU make sure that what's coming in is Yashin? The answer is yes. Very often, the OU is a policy when it comes to Yashin. They will not say that a place is Yashin if the Kalim aren't Yashin as well, as a policy. They will allow a restaurant to write that the following items that we prepare are made with Yashin flour, but our products are not Yashin. But the Mashbiach will be checking everything that's coming in.
Have a malt.
Huh? Malt? I'm not sure if they're checking that, but most of the places are not using malt per se.
It will take two more questions. Yeah.
How many mashgichim do you use it for a dinner or a banquet? How many? One is obviously not enough because it's a big crowd.
Generally, in a hotel, you'll start with a minimum of two. But we've had dinners with four, five, six. It depends on the number. You see, people say, well, how come for my dinner of 300 people, you had two people, but for my dinner of 250, now you have four people? Right? The answer to that question is that you have three kitchens, all operating at the same time. You need someone in each kitchen, and you need someone to be able to run, to go from one to the other, and you maybe even walk-in-talk. There's no formula But the Baal Simcha and the caterer want to err on the side of less. That's when the Hashgacha has to err on the side of more.
One last question.
So what someone who asked didn't ask yet.
You mentioned before that by you can have a hotel, trade, and a kosher going on at the same time, or is this far apart? Can you elaborate about what portions you take when you have multiple events going on, one trade and one kosher?
Mashgiach is standing right there. The Mashgiach is now if the kosher is where I'm standing and the treif is where Rabbi Grossman is standing, the Mashgiach is over here, right? And he's not you know he's not the tamid of the lechem aponim, but he's the tamid of the menorah. It's always lit. Right? He's always with his eyes open.